This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Thanks to Jacqueline Alexander for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. Have you filed your tax return yet? If you haven't, you're not alone. The IRS says about one-third of Americans wait until the last minute to file their federal taxes. And if you're counting it down, you've only got a little over 2 weeks left until the filing deadline, unless you get an extension. And joining us with advice on tax filing, corrected 1099s, extensions, and all the other fun things that go with tax season, certified public accountant with Barnes Denig, Agnes Spelker, and Chris DeSimio, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And good to see you, Agnes, and Chris, good to see you this afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's always a pleasure.
Yes, and it's a Friday afternoon, so it doesn't get much better than that, right, Chris?
And not just any Friday afternoon. Not just any Friday afternoon. Of course, it happens to be the first Friday of the month, which means we get a look at the unemployment
figures.
April
1st. Mm-hmm.
It also is April Fool's. But we all know what's happening Monday. Ask Howard Wilkinson. Everyone knows. Everybody knows what's happening on Monday. The city shuts down.
That's right. Opening day is getting closer, so, you know, who's worried about taxes right now, right?
Now, I don't get a shutdown on Monday. I'm going to be working very hard on Monday.
It's the busy time of year for you, Agnes, so I can imagine. Before we start talking about filing your taxes and doing that tax return properly, it's been interesting with the stock market recently. It's been rebounding in a really big way. And in fact, yesterday we hit kind of a milestone.
Well, they did. They rebounded better than our UD Flyers did back all those weeks ago. Last time we were here, in fact. At one point this quarter, February 11th, we got off – let's just roll the tape backwards. January 1st, we got off to – the worst start since records have been kept, since standardized records have been kept, was what the worst January on record. And as February got underway, it became worse. At one point, the S&P 500, I happen to have the number right here, was down over 10%. That was on the close of business February 11th, 10.27% for the year. Now, since that point, there's been a turnaround in the price of oil, which has gone from the mid-20s to around 40. So that cloud has lifted. The question mark over China, is China going to fall off a cliff or not? Well, that's been lifted, and the Shanghai composite is approaching 3,000 now. And there's less uncertainty about who the nominee is going to be. Less uncertainty. The market,
a little less political uncertainty
correct,
at this point.
Right. Yeah. There are fewer candidates on the field. So that field has been winnowed down a little bit.
So the market's starting to digest all that a little easier.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And as those three clouds have lifted, we started to get some economic numbers that weren't all that bad. And today, for example, we got a report that said that though the unemployment rate itself inched up a notch from 4.9 to 5%, the non-farm payrolls grew more than expected. They're expecting about 210,000. We got 215,000. Initial sell-off today, Dow was down about 100 at the opening, but then we started getting a look at some of the manufacturing numbers and the Institute for Supply Management figures, and suddenly now as we speak, the Dow's up about 60 points. Here we are. It's April 1st, about 1:35 in the afternoon, and we've gone from a minus 100 to up about 60, and it's an entire, it's the cohort of companies that are doing it. As the dollar has weakened, that's been good for companies that make stuff here in the United States and sell it overseas. So it's been a pretty strong showing all up and down the lineup.
Well, and it's interesting too what you were talking about earlier, how back in January how bleak things looked, and I kept hearing the
bleak would have been an upgrade.
Yeah, I kept hearing the old comment. In fact, I think we were even saying it about as January goes, so goes the year. So does this really mean anything, Chris? I mean, can we tell anything from this at this point?
Well, it means that the people who make a living, getting people excited and getting people scared, if that's what you do for a living on commercial broadcasts, then it means that you're in business for the rest of the year. It's important to keep in mind that typically in presidential election years, that generally speaking, the broad markets do okay, low double-digit returns. However, in years in which no incumbent runs, you have more uncertainty because the people who make up the market don't really care whether they, it's not whether they like the incumbent or not. It's that they know how to play the incumbent. But if you don't know who the incumbent is, that's one more level of uncertainty that they'd rather not deal with. And so in years in which there's no incumbent running, you usually have returns going into the low single digits. You usually do have. Historically, you have a choppy first quarter. Usually the rally in those years doesn't start until March. It got off to a – it started a little earlier this year. Then you have a rally into the summer. This is the pattern. This is not a guarantee. This is not a, you know, to say this will happen, but this is what has happened in the past. You get a rally into the summer, into the conventions, and then that time, that window between the conventions and the election is choppy. And then you end up with a figure in the low single digits. So this, so far this year, it's about playing out according to form.
But at least at this point, we can kind of glow in the occasion, because what was it I heard that
biggest comeback
since 1933?
Yes, since exactly the biggest comeback from a negative quarter to finish positive. And as again, the S&P 500 for the quarter was up just a smidgen. Just about 1 point, 1%. Yeah, it would have been like had the Flyers come back from 20 points down to beat Dusty Rhodes' Syracuse Orangemen, it would have been okay. You know, it would have been something of that historic a rebound.
You had to remind me about that again, though.
I did.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation with Agnes Spelker. And keep in mind, we can't answer specific tax questions today. They have to be general in nature. For the specific ones, you really should check with your own accountant or your own tax preparer. But Agnes, thank you. Thank you for being here today. We really appreciate it. And if I want to hire someone to prepare my taxes, how tough is that going to be for me to find somebody who's available this close to the deadline?
This close, it's pretty hard. You're not going to find good people that are out there and ready to do tax returns now for you. We're backed up. We're trying to get it all done. But we do take people in now, and we do extensions, and we will offer, you know, our best services and do it at that point in time. But at this point in time, it's pretty hard to find people that really want to do it. Now, you can...
Hard, but not impossible.
That is correct.
What are some of the things, Agnes, that people can do today, 2 days before the filing deadline, without doing an extension, to reduce their liability for the 2015 tax year? Is all lost, or is there still hope?
There's still things that people can do. People can put money into an IRA that can reduce their income. I mean, that's really the big thing that they can do right now. Otherwise, 2015 is closed. You can't take expenses that you haven't taken already. We've gone past time, so there's difficulty with that.
What about if someone is self-employed?
Self-employed, we've got all kinds of options as far as retirement.
If you're a realtor, for example, or you have your own business, is it too late to set up a simplified employee pension, a so-called SEP?
No, you still have time to get it set up. You got to get it set up now. The reason is because, and you can do it, you can actually put money into that until the actual due date, the extended due date of the return. And the reason is because you need to know what your income is going to be. And if you don't have your return done, you don't know what your income is. So by getting your return done, then you can find out how much income you actually have and how much you can put away into a plan.
And don't scare me. Did you say 2 days remaining? Is that what I heard you say?
No, 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
That's right. I was going to say it's 2 weeks.
No.
In fact, it's the 18th. We get a little extra time this year.
We do get the 18th, but we try not to tell anybody
And is it because of there's a holiday in Washington, D.C.?
That is correct.
What is that holiday? I think it's the day slavery ended in the District of Columbia or something.
That is correct. It is a District of Columbia holiday, and that's the reason why April 15th is not the due date. April 18th is the due date.
So you mean we don't have to get started on this until April 17th?
What am I worried about? I have 2 extra days. I don't have to rush now.
Thank goodness.
We have a lot of people that do give us the stuff at the end. It's much better if you can get things together earlier and spend the time and make sure you...
Everyone around you is in a better mood if you get it done earlier.
That's right. Well, and you're in a better mood. Think about it this way. Most of your documents come in January or February. If you can start gathering those things, and you know what just happened over the year, if you wait a long time, then it's harder to gather the information that is needed. So if you start gathering it right away rather than waiting till the last minute, then it makes things easier. And then there's always things that you have to wait for. Broker statements are not coming. They don't come by February anymore. Some of them are coming in March. Some of them still haven't come yet. But the information that you do have, if you can get that together earlier, the better.
Well, that brings up a question, Agnes. The 1099s.
Yes.
You get a 1099. It's obviously not correct. And what do you do about that? I mean, especially at this late date, is it too late to be saying I need a corrected 1099 for my tax return?
No, it's never too late to say I need a corrected 1099. If the 1099 is incorrect, then it needs to be fixed, no matter how it's incorrect or where it came from. Because that information goes directly to the IRS. And if it's incorrect and you don't use that information on your return, you're going to get a matching notice. The IRS has become much better at matching so that they can figure out, okay, I've received a 1099 from this person. This 1099 should be on the return. And if it's not there, then that's a possibility of a matching notice.
Should you file even the incorrect information? And then how do you handle that? Exactly, if you can't get a corrected 1099 fast enough.
If you can't get the corrected 1099 by April 15th, that's not a problem, as long as you know that it's going to be corrected. So I would file with the correct information, as long as you know that the person that you're receiving it from is going to give you a correct one. So use the accurate information, as long as the accurate information is going to be coming. So it doesn't matter whether the 1099 gets fixed now or whether it gets fixed in 6 months. But it's a matter of what you have available to you.
Because they're going to check and make sure you listed everything that they received as well.
That's correct.
You know, it used to be that 1099s were in people's hands by the end of January. And that has become increasingly more difficult with the tax law change that took place about 13 years ago. It had to do with how you recognize a loss, whether it's long or short term. Would you mind just kind of giving people some background on it so they don't think it's just specific to one investment company or one mutual fund family, which they all shall remain nameless, of course. But why is it that 1099s have been coming later and later? As you would think, technology is getting better. So why is it that 1099s have been coming later?
Well, there's a couple different things. You had mentioned the law change a while ago. And what happened was if you sold something on December 31st, and you sold it for a loss, and then you turned around and you bought it by January 31st, and this could be through a mutual fund or your personal or whatever. If it's through a mutual fund, then that loss is not recognized. It's considered a wash sale. So because that loss is not recognized, we don't know, or the brokers don't know.
Even the mutual fund doesn't know
The mutual fund does not know until January 31st. Then all the brokers now are required to report the basis and report the gain or the loss. So that's fairly new. So that they're trying to get their books and everything up to date, but that's also additional information that needs to be provided that is taking longer.
And she brought up a term that's a wash sale, because I think that confuses a lot of people, doesn't it, Chris?
Yeah. Well, and again, towards the end of the year, let's say that you actually had something that had gone up in value and you sold it and you booked a gain. It's not uncommon for people at the end of the year to say, okay, wait a minute. If I don't do something here, I'm going to have to pay taxes on this big gain. So what do I own that's gone down in value? And the IRS pretty much says you have to have some skin in the game. You just can't have a riskless transaction. So if you have some, let's say you have something, you book $10,000 worth of gains. Again, I'm not an accountant. I'm not pretending to be an accountant. But these are the kinds of conversations that people have with their financial advisors and accountants throughout the year. You have $10,000 of gains. You have something that has gone down $10,000. On December 31st, you say, you know, I'm going to sell this to offset the gain. But you just can't sell it at 10 in the morning and then get back in at 10:02. Because you're not at risk. You have to go into to sit on the bench. You have to sit on the sidelines for 31 days.
So I can't sell at a loss and then turn around and buy it back
within 31 days.
That is correct. And that doesn't matter whether it's the end of the year or in the middle of the year. You can't sell at a loss and then turn around and buy it again.
Otherwise, it's disallowed. And in fact, Agnes, isn't it correct that you can't buy it back in a different account. You can't sell it in a taxable account and then buy it back in an IRA either.
That's correct. But that's a little bit harder for the IRS to recognize or to see.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us, and let's talk with Andrew in Avondale. Hi, Andrew.
Hello.
How are you today?
Okay.
Go right ahead.
Well, usually I wait till the last minute to file my taxes, and I have my paperwork done, which is very unusual. I had that done about a month ago, but I didn't have money to, I didn't have money to pay. And, I didn't know, wasn't setting up a payment plan, what to do if I, if I can file before the deadline, but I don't want to pay before the deadline. Are there any options like that?
Well, the IRS has payment plans available. If you can't file today, if you can't pay today, but you can pay by April 15th, you can hold on to that return and not file it. If you're electronically filing it, you can electronically file the return and not actually send the check or the payment in until April 15th or April 18th this year. But the IRS has payment plans. Generally, what a lot of people do is they go ahead and they file their return if they don't have the money, and they wait until the IRS comes back and says, you haven't paid. And by that time, if you have the money available, then you can go ahead and make the payment, and you don't even have to set up a payment plan.
But, that kind of touches on something interesting, too, the idea of the extension, because I think a lot of people get confused about that as well. What exactly does an extension do if you're in a situation where you aren't ready to file your return? What does the extension actually do for you?
The extension is only an extension of time to pay, or of time to file.
To file.
Not a time.
Doesn't save
to
you
pay.
From paying, right?
Does not save you from paying. So if you have money due, you need to make sure that you pay that by April 15th. Otherwise, if you extend the return and you still have payments, there's penalties and interest associated with that.
Yeah. And Agnes, is there a formula or a general rule of thumb about how close you have to be? So let's say you've gotten your taxes done, you owe $1,000, you don't have it with you right now. How close do you have to be? Is it if you think it might be $900, but it turns out that it's $1,000, and so let me back it up. So let's say you've done your taxes, or your accountant has said, okay, it's $1,000. So you write the check for $1,000, even though because you're going to file an extension because you don't have it all done, but you think you owe $1,000, and it turns out that you owe $1,500. Do you owe a penalty on that difference between at what point are you in trouble for under withholding or underpaying?
You're always in trouble. There's always a penalty and there's always an interest. So it's not, but you're not as in big of trouble if you pay at least 90% of the tax. But the idea is you have to pay the tax by April 15th. You do not have an extension to pay the time. You don't have an extension of time to pay.
So Chris's hypothetical situation here, I think I owe $900. I pay the $900. I really owe $1,000. You're penalized on the $100. Is that how it works?
You're only penalized on what you didn't pay.
Right.
So you want to pay as much, pay what you think you're going to owe. And it's penalties and interest. And the interest and penalties aren't that high right now.
Right. So it's not as if you're called to the principal's office. You
no.
just maybe have to stay after and clap the erasers kind of thing. It's not a full-blown detention.
Correct.
Okay.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And it seems like a real basic question, but it is an important one. How do you know whether you should file a regular 1040 or a 1040 easy? How do you make that determination?
It depends on what you have. If you only have a W-2, then the 1040 easy is going to be able to take care of it. You can have some interest and dividends and those types of things. Anytime you get anything more than that, you pretty much have to file a 1040 rather than the 1040 EZ.
Who, Agnes, are the types of people who generally can not have to use a professional? In other words, what are the triggers for a return that get them into the complication level that say I need help? In other words, who's likely to be able to do this themselves, and what kind of things can they do to make it easy and painless?
My personal opinion is that everybody should have somebody look at their tax return every 3 or 4 years. Now, maybe you can do it, but there are changes in the tax law constantly. So for somebody to be able to keep up on that, even a student, are you taking advantage of the student loans? Are you taking advantage of the tax credits available to you? Do you even know the tax credits are out there? So my general recommendation is if you like to do your tax return, great. but have somebody just even look at it.
Have a pro
and we
look
offer
at it.
To do that too. You know, if you want us to do that, we would come, we would look at it, and if you're doing everything right, that's fine. But the tax laws change, and it's hard for us to keep up on it. It's hard for anybody else to, for somebody else.
Agnes, if I'm out looking for somebody to do my return, should I comparison mm-hmm. shop? Should I go out and see who's going to get me the biggest return?
Well, you want to get the biggest return, but you want it done legally too, and you want it.
Oh, that. Yeah. Yeah, that. Minor detail.
So, as long as somebody is professional, you want a professional that is going to do it legally also.
Okay. So be careful in that respect.
Yes.
Yeah. What's a good way to know as far as picking a tax preparer? What do you look for? What kinds of things?
Generally, you should talk to people that you know. You know, who do you know? Who do they go to? Are they comfortable? Are you find somebody that
somebody else
has. Have
they ever had any problems with something they filed?
That's
okay?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
And, of course, becoming a certified public accountant is a big deal. These are difficult tests, years of study, usually a degree. An undergrad degree in accounting, perhaps a master's in accounting.
That is correct.
And then you sit for a fairly rigorous exam, is it not?
That is correct. In fact, now it's a 5-year that kids have to go to school for 5 years before they can get their CPA, before they can even sit for the CPA.
Wow.
And if you're a do-it-yourselfer and you're doing it online or using tax software, just how much does it depend on how knowledgeable you are?
Some of the tax softwares are pretty savvy as far as they're telling you what to put in where. But like I said, it's always a good idea to get somebody to
have somebody double check you.
You have to be a little savvy. You have to understand. A lot of times, a big mistake people do is they put information in twice, or because they didn't understand the question, so then they answered it and answered it again, and now they're paying tax on something that they didn't have.
Yeah, and the software processes it and says, okay, we put it in twice, so it must have happened twice. It doesn't pick it up.
That's right.
513-419-7100. Let's talk to Mac in Centerville. Hi, Mac.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a couple questions on the state income tax.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, what accounts for the increased number of pages this year? And I'd argue complexity on the state return. Secondly, can you comment on the items of the deductible items or credits that are currently mean tested this year? I think there's several of them. And lastly, can you explain that business income tax deduction?
Three questions from warm, warm and cheerful Centerville. Good.
Okay.
Mac, we'll have to charge
Good
you for the
gracious.
Three questions.
Yes.
Thank you.
The Ohio tax return, and actually, tell you the truth, the first time I looked at it, it looked very, very complicated. But it's really exactly pretty much like before. The business deduction is the big one, and that's one that a lot of people don't understand or don't get. If you have a W-2, you don't have a business. That's not a business. If you have interest and dividends, that's not a business. But if you are actually out there working and you are filing a Schedule C or you are filing a Schedule E, those are all business deductions.
Or if you're a farmer with the Schedule EIEIO,
if you are a farmer, yes, with a Schedule F, that is available. And yes, there are limitations now. They are not allowing the retirement credit. They are not allowing the exemption credit once your income goes over a certain amount.
So those are all things that are means tested, as you said.
Those are all things that are means tested. In particular, is there something you want to know about that?
513-419-7100, and let's talk with Mike in Finneytown. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a 1095-B from one of our health insurers. My wife and I have different insurers, and I didn't get one from the other insurer. And was I supposed to file that with the 1040?
The 1095 was supposed to be due, and it came out this year, so it's all brand new.
What is a 1095?
A 1095 is a statement telling exactly how much health insurance you had. So were you covered for the whole year, and how were you covered?
Okay, interesting. This is new, is it not?
So the question, this is new. It's brand new this year. They were supposed to be out, but now they're not even required to be filed until June. 30th, so you can't have it. The big thing that needs to be on the personal return is whether you are covered with health insurance. And then if you do have Obamacare or if you are covered by the government, that actually has to be reported on the return. And that's difficult for people that are trying to do their own personal return.
Interesting.
Joe joins us now. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I was wanting to ask, a lot of advice says do things at the end of the year so you can change your tax situation. How do I estimate, you know, the amount I'm going to be able to deduct and things like that without filling out the form?
And what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I've got a good idea of my, you know, my last paycheck. I've got my salary, how much I've gotten there, the federal taxes that have come out, so I can guess. You know. But how would I know then to sell a bunch of stock or, you know, put money into a 401k because that will make a difference on my return in April?
The biggest thing to look at is to look at the tax schedules. Where are you on the tax schedule? If I know what my income is, and I know what my exemptions are, and I know what my deductions are, where do I come out? And you don't have to fill it out. It's simple as that. What's your income minus your standard deduction, which is $4,000 apiece, minus approximately what you did last year? What tax bracket am I in? And by tax bracket, it's only that next dollar that you're paying on at that tax bracket. All your other income is taxed at the lower tax brackets until you get to that bracket. But if you want to go below that bracket, it's not filling out the whole form. It's looking at those three items.
Right. I guess it's exemptions. So I always get confused. Exemptions and deductions. I think the exemptions are $4,000 now.
Exemptions.
And the deductions are whether you itemize, it could be anything. And if the standard is...
And the standard is $12,500.
For a couple.
For a couple.
Filing jointly.
And $6,000-something for a single person.
Agnes, thank you so much for joining us today. And Chris, thanks for being here
always
as
pleasure,
well.
Always a pleasure, Mark. Thanks, Agnes.
Thank you.
Certified public accountant with Barnes Dennig, Agnes Spelker, and Krista Simeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. As a reminder, the information provided on the show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation.